maybe the most important station to me in my career and journey. I'm really grateful to you guys for existing and doing what you do.
Hayes Carl. Listen for his music and other local artists here on KPFT.
Hi there. I'm Luba Dvorak, singer-songwriter here in Houston, Texas. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
I'm going blind from the brake lights on this L.A. freeway tonight.
Hi, this is Michael Woodson of Living Art. You are listening to KPFT Houston.
It is 6 p.m. Wednesday, time for award-winning So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, where every week we place the spotlight on ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. And you're going to take these fanciful journeys only here on Houston's community station, listener-sponsored KPFT. I am its proud producer and today's host, Hank Rubicek. You know, it's no hyperbole to label Shane Larango one of the premier storytellers of the country. She's the creator and author of 10 Gallon Texas Tales, one of which is published in the 40th anniversary anthology of the Tejas Storytelling Association, which happens to be on sale at their festival March 7th through 10th at the Denton Civic Center, or you can also purchase it directly from Parkhurst Brothers Publishing. Shane is special. I kind of know I was the one who edited the bios for all the tellers in this resource, and I tell you, she redefined the term unique. She was named a rising star by the Dallas Storytelling Guild and claimed the prize for greatest liar in Texas at George West Storyfest. And man, there are a lot of liars in this state. Shane's also a proud grandmother, aspiring comedian, activist, and could do something very rare. I know, because I've been a professor for 42 years. She not only informs others of her pronouns, but she can actually use them in a sentence. A fun person and astonishing storyteller who lives her life's mantra, I've got something to say. Shane, thank you for being here. I don't mind telling our listeners that I'm so stupid in technology. It took us 11 and a half hours to get this ready, but it's worth it, right? Thanks for being here.
It is. And thank you. Timing is everything.
Yeah. You know, the pronouns are weird. The other day, I had a former student who said to me very formally, Dr. Rubicek, what's your pronoun? I said, it. How about that? You can call me it.
How's there that? You go. I'm telling you.
You know, I've always been.
I first got asked my pronouns at a storytelling thing, and I was like, I get to pick? What?
Right.
I thought they were just given to me. And so I love that idea of choice right. in our society.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Especially if it adheres to language.
Yeah. Well, I tell people all the time, I've always been it. When I was a kid, someone would say, tag, you're it. I'd say, you're damn right I'm it. So yeah, it works. Now, you've got something to say as your personal mission statement. I'm fascinated by that. What does that mean?
Well, there's a story, of course.
Of course.
So I had to have surgery, and it was a necessary medical emergency. And I do not do well in any kind of medications and anesthesia, especially. So I came out of the anesthesia early, mm-hmm. and it was a very traumatic experience for me. And I could smell the plastic of the air thing on my face, the air mask on my face, and all of this stuff. And I was in this moment that I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
And I started fighting and fighting and fighting and screaming, I've got something to say.
I gotta tell you, that is I was praying that I never heard anybody talk about that story. You hear about it all the time. In other words, you woke up before the surgery was over.
No. I will say that the surgery was done. But okay. I have woken up during procedures mm-hmm. before I was supposed to wake up. But that particular surgery was finished but it wasn't, yeah, I hadn't gone through the recovery process. There's like this moment that they acclimate you right. to coming back, because anesthesia is a near-death experience for the body. And there's, yeah, there's talk about being a redhead, that that things don't work quite the same way as they do for other people. And so you require about 20% more.
Wow.
But a lot of doctors don't know that and don't do that. So, but it's becoming more scientifically studied and accepted. And then they just don't take our word for it.
That is, that's an incredible story. And I'm going to see you at the festival. So we're going to talk more about anesthesia, life in general, and your mantra. What an interesting connection. Okay, let's tell some stories, which really encases the perfect theme, I think. The stories that you want to tell, these are the stories that you want to tell, but I think these are the stories that kind of need to be told if I know something about them. I also want our listeners to know that this is kind of a special show, because when you're listening to this, the festival will be getting tomorrow, right on March 7th. So if it's convenient, you want to get there. But this is a spotlight. This is a spotlight of some of the greatest tellers in the country and the sort of people that you're going to experience if you're fortunate enough or lucky enough to come to this festival. So let's go ahead and tell this first one, which is called Hummingbird Spirit. But first, in just a few seconds, you got something to say about a rattle from Peru.
Yeah, so this is what this story is about. And I would say in a sense that it falls along the genre of creative nonfiction. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where this one comes from. And there is an actual rattle from Peru.
Right. Uh-huh. Wow. You're an interesting person, Shane. You're an interesting person. Tell us the story.
Okay. Well, I haven't been to Peru, but my friend has. And one of the things that she does there is works with plant medicines to expand her consciousness. And it has been a very interesting experience to learn secondhand about what she does. And we were having a conversation one time walking through the park, and I just started singing a song. And she said to me, she said, that is what their leader talks about, is about calling in a song, or a song that is calling to be sung. And that's the way I feel with stories sometimes, that maybe they need to be told, or they want to be told, you know, apart from us. And if you have ever read Big Dream by Elizabeth Gilbert, and then this is another concept that I learned from Adam Booth, who's an Appalachian storyteller, that a story is a dynamic thing, just like the storyteller and the listener. And so that sometimes stories call out to us, and if we listen, they want to be told. So move in to, there was a package in the mail. Oh, and she was so excited, because, I mean, who gets packages anymore unless you send them to yourself, right? But personal letters and packages, and she was just so thrilled. And she was back to that little kid stage when she shook the package to see what it was, and she heard something that moved her, and it literally moved her almost off her feet. She lost her balance. She was like, oh, what could it be? I must have shaken too hard. Well, she comes into the house and goes to that drawer that has the scissors in it. And they're always there now, because she lives alone. And she began to open that package, and she struggled with that desire to like tear it open, like when you're a little kid, and then to savor this moment, because who knows when somebody was ever going to send her a package again. And when she opened the lid, she saw what she had heard. It was this beautiful wooden rattle, and she immediately picked it up and started shaking it just as hard as she could. She felt herself leave her body, and she put the rattle down because it startled her. She started taking her deep breaths and thinking, okay, name five things that you can see right now. There was the table. There was the package. There was a note inside the package. She was grounded enough. She took out the note, and it was a handwritten letter from her friend. Dear one, we are having the most amazing time in Peru. We come to the market to buy our food, and I have bought all the gifts that I wanted to bring back home. But every day, this rattle caught my eyes and brought me to it. And I would look at it, and it would say, buy me. But I thought, I've already bought all the gifts that I needed to buy for people. I can't just buy something else. But it called me every day. And I finally made a deal that if I had money on the last day and it was still here, I was going to buy it. And of course, I did. And it was. Now, when I got this rattle into my possession, I thought, is this for me? And as I started shaking it, it said, send me to Shane. So, you have a beautiful emerald green tapestry from Peru from me, and a rattle from the hummingbird spirit. Oh, she was delighted. Oh, just absolutely delighted. Something had called to her. It was for her. And it had come all the way from the southern hemisphere to where she was in the Pacific Northwest in the northern hemisphere. Just like a migratory patterns of the beautiful hummingbird. And she sat in ceremony with it as much as she could. She would light a candle, she would say a prayer, and she would rattle and dance and rattle and dance. And through that connection, she began to make out words. Now, if you have never translated hummingbird through a rattle into English, it's not an easy task. And just like with any translation or any language, it's all metaphor. And you just do your best. But she began to make out the love and compassion that was coming in the message. And the respect that was having its place to then translate the message. And so she said, dear ones, we recognize your love and your generosity and your compassion for us. We see it in the effort that you make, in all the things that you do. But one thing we must tell you from our hearts to yours is that the ruby-colored feeders that attract us, that are full of the processed sugar water, are just as detrimental for our health and well-being as it is for yours. And if you love us, please plant the plants for us. Plant the plants for our food and for the other pollinators to eat naturally for our health and well-being. And the beautiful thing that you will find is that there is a plant for every season that will feed us and take care of us and love us, just as Pachamama decided it to be so.
Beautiful.
She thought, oh my, what in the world can I call this voice that has come to me? And they say, the simplest thing, we are just messengers. No label is needed.
That's beautiful. That is so beautiful. I love the merger of, you know, a folk tale and narrative tone. That is so beautiful. What inspired this story?
The rattle from Peru with this. It was a hand carved relief of a hummingbird.
Yeah.
And my friend told me, she said it was the only hummingbird in the whole, there was tons of rattles, and it was the only hummingbird. And it kept calling to her and calling to her. And she did. She bought it. And she said, as soon as she bought it, she thought, this is for Shane. And she's like, I already bought Shane a gift. What am I going to do? And she said, send it on. And there was, a conversation that some other friends and I were having, because in the Pacific Northwest, there is a non-migratory hummingbird called Anna's. And I think they're going to change the name of that. But it sometimes, you know, in the wintertime, it doesn't do well. There are plants that are available for them. You just have to expand your horizon for them. And it's just about the health and well-being of nature and what nature intended for us.
So beautiful. You know, your next yarn is called Good for Your Heart, which is a beautiful title. Let's try a different strategy. Let's kind of jump into this one, and then we'll talk about it when you're done.
Okay. Well, I will say that your comment is the perfect setup for this story.
So this I am the master of segue. That's what they say.
So this story originated some years ago when I was first getting into storytelling. And I had applied to a fringe performance, but then, and then I looked up what fringe meant and all this stuff, and it was risky and it was on the edge and all this kind of thing. And then I got a direction that it needed to be really family friendly. And it was really odd because the youngest person at this thing was 30, you know, in her 30s, and she had graduated from the program of storytelling. So, you know, like she'd been exposed to a lot. And so I started doing this story about food, and this was a section of the food. And the risky part that I incorporated that could be family friendly was talking about the fact that I have generations of family who are Texans from way, way, way back. And I had to expose myself and be very vulnerable before another Texas audience and admit the fact that I don't like beans. They have always tasted like big dirt clods to me. Disgusting, gritty, unflavorful. Ugh. Just the bane of my existence. Now, the funny thing is, growing up in Texas, I had learned to cook them for other people because that was my role. I had learned to cook chicken dumplings and chicken fried steak when I was a girl on diet pills and starvation diets for other people, things that I wasn't allowed to eat. And so this moment in my life came where I needed to change my diet, and I found that beans were really good for my body. And so I had to figure out a way to prepare them that were edible. Now, when I first came up with this story, it included a ham hock and nightshades, which are tomatoes, peppers, all those kinds of things. But since that incarnation of the story, I have found out that ham hocks and nightshades are also not good for my body. And so now we move into the vegan version of this story. And it starts with pinto beans. I've tried cooking other beans, but they just don't do the same. And you open them up and sort through them, get out all the dirty ones and the rocks and the, you put them in a big bowl that is twice as big as the amount of beans that you have, and you fill that bowl with fresh, clean water. And then you run your hands through them, sifting and sieving with your hands back and forth until you get a good wash on them, and then you strain those beans. And you put them back in that bowl and fill that bowl full of water, and you let them soak. And for the next 12 to 24 hours, anytime you think of it, there's no rule to this. You go back and slosh those beans again and run them through your fingers, pour them through the sieve, wash them off, put a nice fresh, clean water back in the bowl, and you let them soak. Now, you let them soak long enough, as much as you can, I'm telling you. But don't soak them so long that they sprout, because this is another incarnation of beans. Then you take your big bean pot that is a staple for every kitchen in Texas. Am I right? And you heat up your olive oil and your garlic. And I'm telling you, don't just use a clove. You use a whole head. That clove is just a sliver, but the head is the bulk. Use it all. An onion and ginger and turmeric root and cumin. And I'm telling you, if you've never tried sumac, you gotta put that in. You can add other flavors that you like, but mix them up in that hot oil till they bloom. And it hits the apex of your olfactory organ, and you feel the seasonings and the spice. And then you add your beans and soak them around in those spices. Coat them really, really, really good, round and round and round. And then you cover them with just enough water to go over the top. And you put them on a really hard boil. And when you let them boil on that hard boil about 30 minutes, you cut down the heat. Fill the pot with water, add your bay leaves, cover the pot, and let them soak and steep in those spices and that heat, and they transform themselves into something wonderful. Now, you set that timer on about 2 hours, and I found out this little part of the recipe by chance, which is always the best way to find out something new sometimes. But I had gone to do my chores in that 2 hours, and something took me outside, and I worked and cleared my palate, so to say, in the fresh air of the outdoors. And when I came back into that kitchen, oh my gosh, the smell was mesmerizing. Now, I know that as a storyteller, there are some people who see what I'm saying, and there are some that don't. But I wonder, can you smell it? And if you walk outside and take a breath of the fresh air, and then walk back in, and one more time, take that deep, deep breath. Can you smell it? And whose kitchen are you in?
All right. A sensory story. You know, it occurred to me. When you said bane of my existence, right? Isn't bane really the word bane with a Texas accent? You know, bane? No.
Bane?
No, it just occurred to me. You know? You like any bangs in your chili? I don't know. I'm just making it up. I don't know. It's just kind of funny when you said that, because when you said beans and banes, bane, it occurred to me that it sounds pretty similar. Hey, what's the lesson? What is a lesson to this story? Other than don't eat beans, or, you know, think twice. What is it? Because there's really a lesson to every story, no matter what they are, right? I mean, clearly you like the story. So why don't you tell us, why do you like that story? In about 30 seconds, compartmentalize it. Why do you like the story?
Well, it's about beans, which is a very Texas thing.
Which you hate, right?
Yes. And it's also this beautiful thing for me, because in a personal way, adaptation for myself was the greatest indicator of survival.
All right. I love that. Yeah. Well, adaptation is a really important theme. You know, people don't realize that even if you don't think, well, you know, it's all about the listeners, not about the storyteller, right? So when you tell a story, listeners are going to get something out of it. Even if you don't even know why you're getting something out of it, they're going to do it. And I think adaptation is a really great central theme to this. But I love this story. This is really a fun story. This is Hank Rubichek, and you're listening to award-winning So What's Your Story with award-winning guest teller Shane Larengo, only on, you guessed it, award-winning KPFT, Houston's community station, 90.1 FM HD1, 89.5 with our friends in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. You know, there's nothing more powerful than stories. This is the message that the best team on radio, Mary Edgerton, Larry Thompson, Eric Heen, and I drive home every week since 2008. And our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is a great place to learn to tell stories. They meet virtually on the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. So visit their website at houstonstorytellers.org for the Zoom link to all of the story swaps and for information about upcoming events. You can also take your story skills to the next level by becoming a member of the Tejas Storytelling Association. And if convenient, join us at our festival at the Denton Civic Center starting tomorrow, March 7th. I promise that it's going to be more fun than the law allows. And all you have to do is check out the details at TejasStorytelling.com. That's TejasStorytelling.com. And also consider the National Storytelling Network for a more intensive storytelling experience. And our moth for you personal narrative lovers at the new Warehouse Live in Midtown here in Houston is the second Tuesday of the month, and they're doing their thing. So get the tickets online, because they really do sell out fast. It's a great date night, and it's a bar. So if you don't like your date, you can get drunk. And if you do, you can get drunk. I don't know. But please visit us also on So What's Your Story at facebook.com/So What's Your Story. And let us know if you have guests you'd like us to consider. And that includes you. And if you want to shoot us a note, go ahead and write to us at SWYS, acronym for So What's Your Story, at kpft.org, and one of us will get back to you. We're really known for getting back to people. It is not a myth, but I'll tell you what is. I'll tell you what is a myth. It's Medusa. Okay, see, there you go, another segue, right? There you go, Shane. Without a comprehensive lesson in Greek mythology, Medusa, the snaky-haired monster of myth, was often seen as the most horrific woman in the world. She was beheaded by the Greek hero Perseus, who then used her head as a weapon because of its ability to turn onlookers to stone. Wow, there's a gal for you. He then gave it to goddess Athena to place on her shield. Enough for that right now, but suffice it to say, this is an intriguing, intriguing person, especially since she was a mere mortal. Now, I know this isn't a great introduction, but it gives people an opportunity to know that I've read a book or two. But more importantly, fill in a few blanks for us before you tell us this incredible story really about synchronicity. Fill in a few blanks for us.
Yes, I would love to fill in a few blanks, and we're going to take a deep dive into a dark, dark cave.
Of course.
I may want to give your listeners a little heads up that this is a difficult story to listen to for some people. So when I was growing up, there was a lot of name calling, and you can't see me right now, but I have a lot of thick, curly hair. Now, the wonderful thing was when I was in elementary school, I got called Chewbacca a lot because the hair is also red. But I always took that as a compliment because I had seen the movie. I mean, Chewbacca was an amazing character. And he could fly a plane. I guess he was a he. I don't know. Chewbacca was Chewbacca. But it wasn't intended to be nice. I also got called Medusa as I was growing up. Now, all I knew about Medusa, because I do have a Texas public school education, was that she was a horrible monster with snakes for hair. Now, like I said, I do have a lot of curls, but I just couldn't see it. Now, after a good brushing, a pile of my hair does look like a bunch of daddy long legs when they gather together during the day to rest in bulk. And that in and of itself is terrifying. But snakes for hair? I didn't know. A monster? Maybe. But that's one of the things I didn't go down and research very much. I didn't know all her story. I didn't find out all her story. I really wasn't interested in anything scary like that in my life until after I had read The Women Who Run with Wolves, started professional storytelling, and I was in an airport in about 2018 when a schmarmy man came up to me and said, you look like Medusa. And I turned around and I glared at him with my most evil stare. But he did not turn to stone. He kept looking at me. And I thought it is really untimely for me to unpack this story for myself. And one of the things that I did find out, it wasn't Medusa's stare that turned people to stone. It was when they gazed upon her after she was cursed. And the most prevalent myth, the most one that's even done in pulp culture for the most part right now, comes from an ancient Roman era where there was misogyny and patriarchy that we see even today in our pop culture, like I said. And in that story, Medusa was a beautiful woman. And she was in service to the goddess Athena in the temple. Whether that was by her own will or not, we do not know. But it seems that she was a woman who came from foreign lands that wasn't part of that indigenous culture at the time. She was from far away, mystical beauty. And the quote unquote god, the person of power in that day, named Poseidon, saw her and thought it was his choice to have her and raped her inside Athena's temple. And Athena grew completely angry and was so offended that this had happened in her temple that she cursed Medusa into this hideousness of monsters and put snakes for her hair and gave her this sense of being that when people looked at her, they turned to stone. And when I read that story about a person in power raping someone vulnerable, I looked at it and said, that's me. That's me. It's not my hair that they see. It's that person of vulnerability. I was raped. And no, that's not right. That's not how it goes, because that is the passive voice. That's the voice I was taught and indoctrinated with. That's not how this story goes. A man raped me. A man in power raped me. A man in power as a law enforcement officer raped me when I was 16 years old and incapacitated. Oh, when I had any thought available to me about what am I going to do about this, the first thing I remember thinking is, what am I going to do? Report it to the police? Tell the cops? And I completely pushed it down inside the deep, dark cave of my being and compartmentalized it to the best of my ability and said absolutely nothing to anyone for 25 years.
Wow.
And I guess that was the time that I needed. Because something external came to my ears and my understanding to this story that I thought I held and I had kept from everybody, I found was being told in different circles, in different ways, and from very different perspectives than my own. And to tell you that I felt rage is an understatement. Not only did I feel the rage for what I had been through and what was being said about me, I felt such rage because at that moment when it was at that moment when I knew that he didn't just do this to me. He had done it to every single person he had had the opportunity to. And then I felt such shame because I had not spoken up and protected all of the people that came after me. It was through the next 15 years of therapy and analysis and processing that I learned that I couldn't have predicted any outcome, and that my silence was a survival mechanism that I needed to use for my own psyche to not completely implode over the trauma that was put upon my adolescent body and mind and life. because we will never know who that woman would be that that didn't happen to. And so here we are now. And I remember a moment within the last few years that I felt a more grandmother spirit of Medusa whisper to me, "You found your voice now. You can be an advocate for those people like you who've experienced what you've experienced." And Medusa also had multiple stories told about her. Because if you look back, you can see times when they talked about her being a Gorgon, whatever that was. Maybe that was her nationality. Maybe that was her people. Maybe that was her surname or her name of her peoples. They talk about her in some ways being like a mermaid or a sea serpent with golden yellow scales. And though she was very different than anything they'd ever seen before, she was beautiful. They talk about stories where Medusa wasn't raped by Poseidon, but that she had a consensual relationship with him. But the thread that runs through Medusa's story is that she was punished for sex, whether she wanted it or not. And that brings us to a Perseus art. Now, a lot of people tell this as a hero's tale for Perseus. But if you know me, you know I read it differently. Perseus was also trying to protect his mother from a predator. He was in the way, and the predator was a king who was in power. And so Perseus had very little. And when the king tasked him to bring him back Medusa's head, Perseus had no choice but to follow through with the king's orders. And he was again trying to protect his mother from this man. Now, you understand the machine of the gods. Of course, they came through for Perseus. He was one of their own, after all. And they got him this helmet of invisibility and this sword that always fell a mortal wound, and this well-polished shield like a mirror for reflection. And so if we begin to look at that part of story as archetypes of the conscious and the subconscious, and understand that no one could look upon Medusa without turning to stone, we also have to see not only those that would desire to harm her turn to stone, but those who desired to love her and care for her and comfort her through this trauma could not reach her either. And there was also the idea that to even look upon this brutal act that had happened to her, whether it was the rape or the punishment or both, people couldn't see it. They couldn't look upon it. They couldn't handle that depth of pain. And so Perseus comes in and shields himself from the ego and becomes the observer through the reflection in the shield. And he takes that sword and beheads her. But when you look at that as a figurative action of death and transformation, much like we find in an ancient Indian tale of Ganesha, who had to be beheaded to embody his most divine form, we see that this is an act of transformation for Medusa. And at that moment of her beheading, what leaps forth from her throat chakra, from where her voice would be, is a pure mare of Pegasus, a winged horse, and Chrysaor, a giant with a golden sword. Freedom and truth comes through. And when you look further into the story, you see that there are some that say her blood then was used for medicine, to cure. And Perseus did take her head, or the image of her head, maybe as his crest, maybe to show that he had the power of those strong women with him. And he went and saved women in his journey. I'll let you catch up on that. And he used it as an emblem, much as it's used now. The head of Medusa is a sign at this day to let women know that this is a safe haven of respite for them if they have been involved in some kind of trauma. You still find her icon today.
Wow, that's a riveting story, and that's not a word I use often. You know, I talk about interesting stories and fascinating stories, but a riveting story is one that I want to hear more of, and it's hard to break away. That's a beautiful story. That's a magnificent story. You know, it isn't easy. You know, one of the things that a storyteller, a friend of mine, told me, a great, great storyteller, Joel Ben-Izzi, he's very famous, if you will, said that, you know, Hank, every story is really a myth. Whether it's a myth or a personal story, it's a myth. And the reason is because every story inherently explains the inexplicable. Does that make sense? So in other words, you know, whether it be Medusa or whether it be Shane, we search for answers, essentially, for things. You know, we look for solace. We look for peace. We look for ways to deal with our lives, especially if we've experienced traumas. We look to stories as a way to heal. We look as a way of recovery, for lack of another word. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, this is the kind of story that does just that, right? You know, you tell this story because it's an important story to tell. It's an important story to tell for you and for anybody fortunate enough to be in the vicinity to listen to it. You have people aren't watching you, but that's okay because they're experiencing something that tellers on radio really do well if they're good tellers and you're one of them. You feel comfortable pausing. You don't rush your stories. You know, sometimes people rush the stories thinking, you know what, if there's some kind of a blank spot, people are going to think I'm done with the story. It's not true with you. We wait. That's what riveting means. I wait. We wait for something else you're about to say. It hasn't been brought to closure until you bring it to closure. You do a great job at pausing, giving us an opportunity to reflect and catch up and even become internally transformed at that moment. Do a great job with that. You do such a beautiful job with that. That is an outstanding, outstanding story. Tell us, you do performance, so is there some place we can contact you if we're interested in retaining you or talking more about what you do.
Absolutely. And I do more than just performance. I do keynote advocacy, all sorts of things. But you can find me at shanelarango@gmail.com. And just put story in the subject line or indicate to me. Be patient. I don't live by my email. And if I don't, do you want me to spell my name or will they have a way to?
I'm going
to
get it on the website. It'll be on the website, but it's S-H-A-Y-N-E-L-A-R-A-N-G-O, right? Oh, all right, good. Yeah. Shane Larango. Perfect. Well, we're going to get all the information and I'm going to get it to you so that you can also do some PR. Beautiful. What a beautiful, beautiful story. You know, and I know you do it all. I know, you know, I'm the same way, have talk, will travel, you know, but boomers know that old show. Yeah. If I talk, you can hire me. That's all I can say. Yeah. All sorts of great things. All sorts of great things. What do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say, I do have something to say. So that's definite. But if you do come to the Texas Storytelling Festival on Sunday morning at 9:30 in the morning to our Sacred Tales concert, and you feel so inclined, I'm asking people to wear yellow or gold or something on that spectrum. All right. Just to look out and see. Because this is a difficult story.
Yeah.
And I think it's always nice to have a touchstone for when people kind of experience this, mm-hmm. whether it's just through their listening or their reflection or their coming to terms with something that they've experienced as well.
But, you know, it's a difficult story to hear, as you said, but you make it very accessible. You make it very, very accessible. I mean, this is not one of those get ready to cringe story and, oh, my God, you know, feeling pity and feeling, oh, my God, another one of these. Oh, I can't hear another tragedy. But, you know, that's not what this is. It's not what this is. You know, the inextricable relationship with Medusa, looking at, human myth with Greek myth is incredibly clever. And it works. It really does work. You do a lot of genres. You do personal stories. You know, you do myths. You do folk tales. You have a favorite genre. You have a favorite type of story to tell.
I think it is personal narrative and connecting it to that because one of the things I want to speak to about that is that you have to understand that this story was 40 years in the making.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was the process. Because if you would have heard it 15 years ago when I first started speaking it, it would have been that tragedy tear. I can't control what's happening right now. Right. And so to witness that, I have to give a lot of kudos to the people who witnessed that version of the story before it got to where it is now.
Yeah.
But I do. I didn't grow up with the stories outside family stories of my own, although I did find out that they would use other stories that had been told and insert our family members as characters. So some things that I thought were just unique to my family was actually a folktale. So that was always fun.
Yeah, I mean, but these genres, I mean, you know, a folktale sort of, you know, is designed to keep customs and traditions alive. A myth explains the inexplicable, right? And personal narratives really validate our lives. So you put them together so well. You just talked about growing up, right? Who was the storyteller in your home growing up?
Oh, well, I had a huge extended family. And on both sides, my mom and daddy's side, that we had storytellers. And I will say that it was mostly the men. I mean, it really was. But if I had to pick one, it would have been my mother's baby brother, my Uncle Mickey, and he could literally tell you something that was so unreal, out of this world, off the charts, and you literally could not help but believe what he was saying to you.
Yeah. No, listen, I don't know if you've heard any of the shows or ever hear me tell stories, but you know, and listeners are going to get tired of me saying this again, but my grandmother was the consummate storyteller. She said everything in story form. You know, I mean, everything. If you asked her what's for dinner, she told you a story about a little boy at a carnival, and you had to sit there for 20 minutes rolling your eyes. And then at the end of the story, you realize that the lesson was, don't ever ask me what's for dinner again. But, you know, she just had a way of doing that. It is unbelievable. It really is. You know, wow. Okay. Yeah, this was a fun show. So much to talk about and such a great variety. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but Shane Larengo, featured teller at the Tejas Storytelling Festival on Sunday morning, March 10th. Thank you so much for your endless energy, your absorbing style, and pleasing persona. We're going to have to be doing this again. You know, just one last thing, with about 30 seconds, if you can. Somebody says to you, Shane, I love your stories. I want to tell stories, but I'm a boring person. I have no story to tell. I know it's hard to respond to that in 30 seconds, but what would you say?
Well, first I would say you need to listen and to yourself, to the stories you like to hear, and then be very curious about yourself.
Yeah.
And ask questions and explore, because I promise you, you have an amazing, interesting story that somebody wants to hear.
Perfect advice. I tell people when they ask me, and you know, people call in, they always ask this for years. This is not a call in, but when they call in, that's the first question they ask. Well, I have a story to tell and I want to. How the hell do I do it? Okay. Well, I tell them not only, you know, join storytelling associations, festivals, and get to know magnificent people like us, because, you know, we really do kind of rock. But, you know, I also tell them that we're all born a blank page, a blank book, excuse me. And, you know, our lives are our book. Right? Kind of, sort of. So every day, think of an episode. It doesn't have to be fascinating. It's something from which you learn, you grow, but it's yours. You own it. No matter what that episode is, you own it. And consequently, it becomes your story. Well, in the meantime, we can go on and on and on. This was great. This was so magnificent. And I don't want anybody to even think about moving, because Michael Woodson and Michael Carson are up next with Living Art, another KPFT exclusive. Want you to make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And be sure to join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Hank Rubicek, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Coming up next on HD1, So What's Your Story with Hank Rubicek, Mary Edgerton, Eric Heen, and Larry Thompson. And on HD2, you can catch Making Contact in the meantime.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes, their age, the way they speak? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters.
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner. Or a 14-year-old girl who signs up to every after-school activity not to make friends, but just to get something to eat. Or a retiree who fell ill and had to choose
between getting medicine or groceries.
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Blues Hound, host of Hound the Blues, and you're tuned to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston's community radio station. Commercial-free and listener-supported since 1970. Can you dig it?
It's 90.1 KPFT. Time to check in with the R&R Show. R&R today, Ramblin' and Rumblin'.
Sounds like an album title.
It does, doesn't it?
Wow.
That'll be our first greatest hits collection.
Yes. What would be the greatest hits?
Well, Ronimus parts 1 through 25, I guess. That'll probably take care of the first volume right there.
And, you know, Ronimus, of course, ends on Christmas Eve because that's my birthday. But still, it goes on into the next year.
Ronimus is really all year long. Are we ever without Ronimus?